It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 186 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm really glad you're listening because we're going to return to the legend of the Montemagi. And to do that, we talk to Eric Dean Seton, the creator of this wonderful series of stories. And he's venturing into new territory with the storytelling, and he's going to tell us all about that and what we might have in store for us in the future as fans of the series. He also talks about fan films and gives some advice to us who might be amateur filmmakers at this point. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Okay, I want to welcome back to the podcast Eric Dean Seton, the creator of one of my favorite books, The Legend of the Montemagi, which is a series of graphic novels that I got last year at New York Comic Con. Are you going to be there again this year, Eric?
I am. Same booth, excited and ready to go.
Oh boy, looking forward to that.
Booth 972.
972, okay, well we'll do that then. Are you going to other conventions too besides that?
I am. We just did San Diego Comic-Con, and then come August, we'll be all over. We'll be in St. Louis for a library convention, and then we're going to Toronto. We're going to Long Beach. We're going to Salt Lake City. We're going to go to Columbus twice.
Wow.
Columbus twice, and then we're going to finish in New York.
Boy, oh boy. So a busy year ahead of you. Yet.
Oh, I'm even out of Chicago. We're going to be at Wizard World.
Oh, wow. Okay. Man, you are going to be a busy guy for the next couple of months. So why don't we start out by, in case anybody has not heard your previous interview with me, why don't you give like a brief summary of what Legend of the Montemagi is about?
The Legend of the Montemagi is a three-book, a six-year-in-the-making graphic novel series. And it's the story of a shallow, conceited district attorney of New York who finds out he's the last in a race called the Montemagi that used to protect us from the forces of evil. So he's the last possible person you would ever want to be hero, has to defend us against an evil sorcerer who's been resurrected in New York City and is posing as a religious leader.
I hate that when that happens. Very good. So yeah, I had a chance to read all three graphic novels and I loved them. I thought they were wonderful. As we talked about before, and I always think it bears repeating, I love diversity in comics. Mm-hmm. I like seeing people of multiple backgrounds, you know, all kinds of diversity in there, including women and different races and stuff. So when I saw your book, I was thrilled. And when I got to read it, it was a great story too. So I was doubly thrilled.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we spent a lot of time working on it, and it is a dream come true, so I'm having a really good time.
So you said how many years did it take to make this?
Six.
6 years, wow. Yeah. I don't remember if we talked about
that. Actually, a little more than that, because I wrote it before the six, but 6 years working on it.
Oh,
we
really?
Probably would have been done a year early, but I completely changed book three.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting, because knowing book three as I do, I'm fascinated by that, because I thought book three was great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it wasn't deep enough. What you got is, of course, the version that came out, but it was just an action sequence. I remember Brad Pitt did that zombie movie, World War Z, and I remember they threw out the whole third act because it didn't have any soul. Mm-hmm. And that was the key for me, is the original version of book three didn't have a lot of soul, so I redid it, mm-hmm. and it totally worked.
Okay, well, great. Well, I love them. I think all volumes are great, okay. And I highly recommend. Now, I often leave this to the last, and people criticize me for that. So how do people get Legends of the Montemagi these days?
It's available everywhere. Obviously, first go to our website, which I would say you have to learn how to spell Montemagi, which is Mantamagi. But it's available for order at any comic book shop. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kindle, Kobe, Comicology. It's available in digital and print. In every single format, in every single place. We're in libraries right now. All the people have to do is just ask for it.
I think this would be a perfect thing for a library.
No.
Particularly people who are trying to expose people to different kinds of storytelling. I think this would be ideal to have in there. So if I ever stop by a library, I'm going to mention it to them because I think it's a good thing.
Thank you. Yeah, we're making a big push. We're in a lot of different libraries. We're all through, oddly enough, Oregon has 26 copies of each book. in their library system. So it's really spreading. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that's great. Now, a couple of things that have happened since the last time you and I talked. Mm-hmm. I noticed you have like a web series, right? Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
We did. In January, we shot a live action short. It's the opening scene of the first book from the series. And it shows the hero, his powers, his weaknesses. It takes you on a journey. And so we shot... It was about an 8.5-minute short that'll be coming out on August 4th on the internet everywhere through our website and through our YouTube channel, which is End Action ENT. Mm-hmm. And then what we did, we had running was a behind the scenes because as a director, I would like the filmmaking aspect of it. So we have 11 episode, 2 minute each, behind the scene look at how we made the short and what went into it. And I found it to be very helpful for people. And it's really interesting because the couple people that have actually seen the final version, the first thing they're surprised is how different it looks than the behind the scenes. And I laughed and realized, most people don't get to see behind the scenes. But we shot the short itself on an anamorphic Red Dragon camera, super wide. It's an amazing picture. We shot it in 4K, but then we downgraded it to edit it because it's just too much to do in 4K. I mean, most people are going to watch it on their phones or on their computers anyway. But the behind the scenes is a really good look. A lot of different professional people that I'm friends with that have worked on many different shows did a lot of favors, so you can learn a bit about effects and stunts and props and set dressing and how we took an empty warehouse that kind of looked like a TV warehouse and turned it into a weapons arsenal. And we shot there for 3 days, and one actor, you know, usually when you go see Batman vs. Superman or Captain America Winter Soldier, you know, there's a zillion different stunt guys to go with the great actor that they've hired. We had one actor that did everything. He was the stuntman and the real actor, and we had one suit. So it was very intricate. I can tell this much. There's a running morph when he runs and morphs into his costume. Yeah. It took 3 days to shoot because the same actor had to do everything, and, you know, you have to do it with a plate where it's nothing there and with him and the different costumes. So each morning, that's what we started with. And it took us 3 days just to finish that one sequence, which is, I don't know, maybe 10 seconds.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's the sad truth is, you know, it looks like magic and it's anything but on the screen.
Right. It's funny, too, because I've had the suit. I had it at WonderCon and I had it at San Diego Con. Everybody loves the suit. Mm-hmm. But when you really look at them up close, all those suits, they're made to be photographed. They're not really made to look like it could really protect somebody.
In other words, you wouldn't want to wear it in a fight.
Basically. Right.
Yeah, which is great. Now, I saw the helmet someplace online. I looked at a picture of the helmet, which I liked. I mean, it really looks very close to what you have in the comic.
The suit is as close to the comic book as we could get. The only difference is the arms are different. We didn't finish the arms because we had a deadline that we had to shoot on. And any changes that we made were only for aesthetics because normally with a big movie, you do test suits. Mm-hmm. You know, you build a suit and they test it and see which one. Well, our test suit was our suit. Mm-hmm. So we just made it as flexible and as creative as possible, but it's as close as we could get, and it's dead on. It's
really dead. Well, it looks great. Well, of course, you did this, so it's going to be accurate, thankfully. You know, rather than hire somebody who has no idea what in the world this thing is about, and then they build a suit, and they present it to you, and you go like, well, that doesn't look anything like it.
Right.
So the great thing was you got to do it, and I'm sure you made it as accurate as possible.
I did, and it was a lot of fun to film. Some of the behind-the-scenes things that I didn't make the cut is that he fights with all these different weapons, and it's funny because there was a nunchuck fight that was supposed to happen, and as soon as we got the nunchucks, we did one swing, and the nunchucks broke.
Oh,
so then we went out and bought real nunchucks, but real nunchucks are heavy, and so they were dent in the back of the suit. So we had to cut that. So it was. I was thinking when you hear stories about how Spielberg made Jaws and how he could never get the shark to work, so you just make changes on the fly, and that's kind of what we did. Like, we had so many things. We shot some things we didn't plan on doing, and then we threw away some things we planned on doing, but we just kept always just trying to tell a story. So what came out was really, really cool, but it's such a process, trial and error, and being able to change on the fly once you go to shoot something.
Now, are you going to release a blooper reel of all this?
You know what? We should cut one together. It would be pretty funny. Maybe after everybody's seen the short, maybe a couple months, we'll put together a blooper reel.
Because, you know, Star Trek, that was a big deal. People would go to conventions just to watch the blooper reel.
Oh, I know. Oh, I still love them to this day. I they're funny.
So you never know. There might be a whole other moneymaker in there for people who like this stuff. Yeah. So, because I have not seen it yet, and I really regret that, but I'm going to when it becomes available. Now, how are you going to let people know? Through the email newsletter that you do? Is that how you let
through the
know?
Email newsletter, and we're just going to drop it and ask everybody to post it on their Facebook and Twitter pages and just repost it and post it, and people look at it. But it'll probably be around 7:30 in the morning West Coast time and 10:30 East Coast time on August 4th. It will drop.
So not far away. Oh boy.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, I was just doing a little email and getting prepared for the premiere that we're going to have too.
Very cool. Now, you're going to show this to the theater? How are you going to do
this? Yes, it was made for the theater. It was mixed for the theater. And so we're going to, on Monday night, we have a theater in Los Angeles. We're going to have a premiere. Mm. So if you're in the Los Angeles area, let me know. I'll invite you.
I wish I was.
We're going to have a premiere Monday night, and we will live stream the premiere and Periscope and all that type of stuff, and have a Twitter booth and all that. And then the next morning it'll drop, so it should be fun. And then that next day I'm on a plane to St. Louis, so it should be a fun week. I'm excited about it, and I finally got to see it on the big screen because we had to do a testing of it. And wow, just the sound, just all that gunfire and all that action, it's pretty cool.
Oh man, I can't wait. And you were talking about how when you saw it for the first time.
I was on set, and it was in the first day halfway through, and we were touching up the paint on his costume, and I had this moment when I, you know, you just out of, like, I guess it's like an out of body, just this moment when you're just like, you're seeing everything at once. And I realized at that moment why it took so long for people to understand 2D versus 3D, meaning, and you know, they see a book. Because remember, a lot of people that don't read comics don't even know how to read them. Mm-hmm. And just to imagine a 2D picture in a 3D world, because like Bryan Singer was the master of it, and he took it to the next level with tone and the look. I mean, remember, Tim Burton was the first person that made Batman's costume all black. Mm-hmm. And X-Men, when Bryan Singer did, he made it all black. They took the 2D world and transferred into the 3D world by making changes that people could understand. The first version of all those movies was not the story might have been close, but it wasn't the look, the costumes were different. They weren't the exact same tale of all of us comic book fans growing up. So I get why it's taken so long. And as I was saying, it's really Marvel and DC that are making their own movies. Nobody else has really mastered it, but they finally let the companies that know how to do it, and then everybody else is still playing catch up, and that's why they're still surprised that all these superhero movies are blowing up the box office, and they're scrambling to try and get their own properties and all that. But it's just different to take 2D into 3D because, you know, the tone, the look, the visuals, there's so much more involved. So as I was standing there, I had that moment when I go, oh, now I get it. And I, oh, we're fine. And I was like, I'm telling my version of the book that, you know, that I would. But yeah, I get it. I get now. It is a different world.
Well, it's very cool. Of course, you have a filmmaking experience. You are a professional filmmaker or movie TV maker, or however you want to put it. And so that must have been at least somewhat helpful for you.
I think very much so. But the funny thing is, I think it helped more in the graphic novel world, because the one thing I did with the books was I wrote them, and then when Brandon, my artist, was drawing them, once I got the pages back and started putting the words on, I put the words on early, mm-hmm. I would change things if I didn't like it, if the image was missing or if it didn't flow. So he would go back, and we wouldn't throw any images out, but we would move pages around and refigure things out and add some images. And I remember, I don't know if I was talking to you, but I remember everybody that I've told that to, they're like, oh, that's an interesting way to do it. And I was like, yo, it's just like TV or movies. Once you shoot something, you go into edit, you're redoing it as you're editing. You know, it's like, I don't think just because you write something that it's done the moment you're done, you're writing it and you're turning it over to an artist. Yeah, I don't see why you can't go back and forth. And it helped us immensely. So standing there shooting, only thing that was really different for me was I was using all my film language that I've, you know, known from becoming a director versus comic book language. So that was the big difference. But it was fun. There's very few things that I've had more fun doing. And that was it. Like, I can't wait to do it again. I hope that everybody likes it. Because the one thing is, in the short, I just concentrated on him, but I would love to do the Sanctuates, which, if you follow the books, are all the women that are like Manta Maji, but the women parts. I have a really cool, different way of shooting an action scene with them that I would love to do next. Yeah.
Well, how do we make that happen? Are you going to Kickstarter it?
I might have to Kickstart that one, because we still have the books and then the short and all that. So I definitely might Kickstart that one. But I think what I'll do is, once the short comes out, use that as a sample to kickstart what I want to do with the girls. Because we don't, first of all, we don't have enough lady superheroes out there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'm sure the early ones are going to be shot in a way that kind of complements the men superheroes. I want to do something totally different. I want to really, like, do something that people haven't really, I mean, you've seen a little inkling of it in some movies, but I have an idea that'd be really, really cool.
Well, of course, Marvel's trying to make, like, Captain Marvel or Ms. Marvel, one of the Marvel women. And, you know, a lot of people are going on. Of course, Joss Whedon came out and said what he said about it, and all this business about the fact that they would sooner film a raccoon than a woman as a lead character kind of stuff. Because what you're doing, I applaud what you're doing, because I think, especially someone like you who understands both comics and the visual medium, you're the perfect person in my mind to make these things and make them work.
Oh, of course, thank you.
The trick for me is how you're going to make this, you know, they call it show business for a reason, because you need money to make these things, unfortunately.
I know. You need lots of money. Well, here's the thing. You need lots of money if you're trying to do Avengers or Captain America. What people don't know in about the entertainment business, I give you, is what's disappeared is the mid-range movie.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to make those anymore. They want to make the tentpole, and they don't make romantic comedies for the romantic comedy aspect. They make it because there's something else in it. Like, they'll make George Clooney's Passion Siriana project because they want him to be in a big tentpole movie.
Mm-hmm.
They'll make a romantic comedy because these two young actors or whoever wrote it, they want them to do something big or to rewrite something that you don't even know that they've spent three times the money to make credit for. So we're missing the mid-range movies. I think Manta Maggio, if it was a movie, it would be a mid-range movie. I don't think it would be a $150 million movie. Mm-hmm. And but it would look as good. I think it's the aesthetics of what you put into it. Number one, it's got to be story first. And the cool thing I learned, we were showing a minute of clip of it at Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's like a little bit of a minute of the fight scene. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because, as I was saying earlier about the nunchucks that broke, mm-hmm. there was a moment when he changes from a shield to a staff. He was supposed to change to nunchucks.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have them, so we just made the staff fight longer. Mm-hmm. And as I watch people watch it, I miss that moment. Because we decided to make this into something, I can tell you exactly how long he needs to fight with each weapon mm-hmm. by how long people's interests were mm-hmm. before it's something that they had kind of seen before. But every time he changed weapon change, people went, oh, whoa. And then they were watching. And because then he's just back to fighting with a new weapon. Mm-hmm. And so it's like a test screening. Like, I learned so much just from watching people watch it, mm-hmm. which is cool.
Which is great because, you know, as a filmmaker, you hope to accomplish certain things. But until you actually show it to people, you can't be 100% certain you've accomplished that.
No, and it's funny because they showed the Batman versus Superman mm-hmm. trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like, I don't know how many people, 15 million, 30 million people have watched it now. I was surprised how many people didn't like it. Because I just thought it was cool. Like, it's very interesting, like, people's interpretation of something,
mm-hmm.
you know. And there were quite a, I mean, they had 10 times as likes as dislikes, of course. Mm-hmm. But I was surprised they had so many dislikes because it's just a trailer. But, I mean, I have to figure everybody takes that stuff seriously and everybody has an opinion. So I don't think you can ever please everybody.
Oh, no.
But if you just do it from a passionate place and just try to go story first, I think you'll come out ahead.
What's funny, because I was just today, I was on Facebook, and there was an article about, there was a revelation of three of the characters in the upcoming X-Men Apocalypse movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they went through Twitter, and they pulled out all the negative comments about it. Why are they all why are they all purple? Why are they all this? Why are they all that? Why does it look like that? Why does the apocalypse look like that? He shouldn't look like that. And on and on and on they went. And then they listed like about 100 of them, it seemed like. And on they went about how bad this thing was. And I felt like saying, you think that's bad? You should watch when they talk about a DC movie trailer. Because that's like 100 times more.
You know what's so funny? We must have been looking at the same stuff. I thought the images looked cool.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, I'm from this side of the business. It's just an image to me. It's not the final movie. They're still shooting.
Mm-hmm.
The purple thing didn't really stand out to me, except for he was standing with another character that is purple and was purple in the comic book.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's very interesting how that mixed together. And I think, isn't he purple in the comic book?
Apocalypse? I don't think so. I think he's blue.
Is he blue?
I think he's blue.
Or maybe it's the lighting. I mean, but here's the thing. That they can fix that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's not the final version. If he is purple, then yeah, I don't know why they did the purple, but... I thought he is blue. You're right. He's blue.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was cool. I always think it's cool to see the 2D, like I was saying earlier, become 3D.
Mm-hmm.
I would have loved to know the people, all those people that hated it, what did they want it to look like? You know what I mean? Like, what would they have done?
Well, this brings me right back to the very first Batman movie, in which he came mm-hmm. out in a dark black armor thing that he couldn't even turn his head side to side.
Mm-hmm.
And the complaint I heard again and again and again is, where are the tights? Why isn't he wearing the blue and gray tights? I said, you want to go out fighting in the nighttime in tights? I said, the fact he had armor made perfect sense, and if he's going to blend into the darkness, black is the perfect color for him to be wearing.
Listen, if that first movie had had gray and the tights, there wouldn't be all those Batman movies. He did the right thing. Tim Burton's a genius, but he did the right thing. You have to remember, comic books, as popular as they are, as pop culture they are, and how we all grew up on them, it's still a niche market. If you're going to please everybody, you have to make things logical,
mm-hmm.
which is why I thought Christopher Nolan's second Batman movie,
mm-hmm.
was brilliant because that was the first time you ever saw Batman in daylight, mm-hmm. you know, and, mm-hmm. and in the streets of Chicago. Every other movie was a fake set. Mm-hmm. And it's the first time that you saw him literally in the city of Chicago, and it looked good. Mm-hmm. It looked real. It looked like he belonged.
Oh, yeah. That's one of my all-time favorite movies anyway. I just... so many reasons. That's the first time in my whole life I was ever scared by the Joker. I always thought the Joker was some sort of silly maitre d' kind of guy. And, you know, he never really was. But I literally, there were times I couldn't look at the screen in that because I was terrified by
him. It was fantastic. Joker.
It was wonderful. Oh, I'm so sorry he's not around to do it again. Believe me. Yeah. Now, speaking of which, that leads to a good question is, how did you recruit the actors for your short?
They're all stunt guys. Philip, who stars in it, he is a actor and a stunt man. He was in Mamma Mia. He's the only black guy in Mamma Mia. He had dreads in the movie. So he could sing and dance and do all those things. So it was a process of finding whoever was going to play the suit, who's going to play Manta Maji. And then once we found the right guy, we built the suit. And the right guy to me was not, for this version, 6'4" stiff guy. It was 5'11" 6-foot actor who can move, because I only had one person that was going to do both jobs, the mm-hmm. talking and the fighting. I mean, you know, in these movies, some of these guys in real life, they're stiffs, mm-hmm. but they're not doing the fighting. They're just doing the close-up fighting. You know, you got a stunt guy doing all the acrobatic stuff. Mm-hmm. So for me, I needed the acrobat. I needed the guy that can move. And then the lead villain is Dan Southworth, who was one of the actors on Power Rangers. Mm. So not only can he act, but he knows how to move too. And then everybody else is stunt guys. Smartly, the villains all wear masks. Mm-hmm. So what we did is we hired like 10 or 12 stunt guys. And then we had like 8 or 9 extras. So when the stunt guys got knocked out, the extras would go and lay down and put on the same color mask. And the stunt guys would double and play somebody else. So 12 stunt guys looked like 25, 30 in the short.
Did you go through like professional means to get these folks? Or did you know them? How did you get them?
Yeah, they're all guys that are working. It was all favors and friends. Mitch Gould and Wayne Doglish were the coordinators. And Wayne, oddly enough, choreographed Batman vs. Superman. So we had Wayne and a guy named Ryan. They did a lot of the stuff coordinating for Batman vs. Superman. And they had a bunch of friends. And it was just word of mouth. I just trusted Mitch and Wayne to grab the guys. And 12 guys showed up on the first day. And the funny thing is, I could hang out with all of them. They were great guys. Just worked hard. And one thing I learned, and I'll tell everybody shooting something like this, because I've worked with many a stunt guy before, but their physical movement and interpretation will always exceed what you wrote or what you think of, because that's what they do. And there's a scene where they're chasing after Philip and they're shooting and they're in levels. So some guys are in the foreground, some guys in the background. And the guys in the background, as they're running, as they pass somebody in front of them that's one of their own guys, they lift their gun up. They don't shoot because they wouldn't shoot their own man. Mm-hmm. Just their physical movement. All they had to do was show what the scene was and show what we were doing, and they naturally did everything. Mm. You didn't really have to like overly direct them or like, you need to pick that up harder. They knew because that's what they do. And that's the same thing for real actors. When you hire a real actor that are just straight actors saying lines, that's what they do. They're always going to enhance your words. Mm-hmm. You know, they're always going to make your stuff better. Mm. So I had very little notes for them. It was like, okay, that was great. Let's, you know, I just need you to get over there faster. And then, oh, that was it. And when they got over there faster, it still looked good. Wow. It looked real.
Very cool. So, well, it's kind of funny because you talked about you took a building and turned it into like the set. And because there are a lot of people who make their own movies these days, how did you access the building? Was that, again, through professional means, or was it somebody you knew who had that available for a time?
Yeah, we just found a warehouse behind the Burbank Airport, because a warehouse behind the Burbank Airport would be cheap. So we found a cheap warehouse and told them what we were. One thing is, for people, because I didn't have a lot of money to do it, and a lot of people don't have a lot of money to do stuff. Mm-hmm. Tell everybody what you're doing. People, when you come with passion and you walk in with these books and you say, hey, I want to take my vision, my dream to real life, and I'd love to use your warehouse. So, but I need it for this many days. And they'll cut you a break. So the people that we got the warehouse from cut us a break, and we got it for a couple extra days for free than what it would cost. And they believed in our vision. And even if they didn't believe in it, it was that scratch your back, scratch mine, somebody doing you a solid. And most of the people that worked on it were doing it for next to nothing, or doing it for free, or just helping out. For our prop master, Nicole, she had never been a prop master before. She works on shows. She'd never been a prop. So for her, it was a chance to hire people that are giving them a great opportunity to move up. Because I've never gotten more emails and text messages about guns in my life. You know, because she was just scouring the city for every type of gun possible. You know.
Wow, very cool. Because I just know there are, because you know, right now there are fan films being made and stuff like that. And I'm sure
I have a question for everybody making fan films. Mm-hmm. I think it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But if you want to make a fan film, to me, and it's just my humble opinion, I think everybody should make a fan film. Mm-hmm. But if you really want to get into the business, instead of making a fan film, make your own character. Mm-hmm. Because you don't own that fan film, and there's only so much you can do with it, but you've spent so much creativity. This is only if you want to get in the business. If you want to get in the business, make a fan film. But if you want to get in the business, do an original character, because then you can enter it in film festivals. You can show it. You can be your calling card more. Not to say a fan film can't, but it's just yours. I mean, we're going to enter the Mantamaji short in every film festival possible, mm-hmm. just for the fun of it. But, I mean, it's mine. You know what I mean? There's a couple fan films I've loved. I like the one with the Nightwing one. I thought that was really
done. Oh, yeah, that was great.
I could tell that they had real talent. Mm-hmm. And I was like, they spent so much time making this thing because it was long. It was like episodes. And I was like, I want to see them do something original mm-hmm. because I only found the fan film, I don't know if I found it by some mistake on YouTube and all that. Mm-hmm. But I would have loved to hear about them as, you know, as a director and stuff, because the way they did stuff on that set, I could tell they knew what they were doing. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would say. It's just my opinion. I'm not saying don't. I'm just saying if you really want to get in the business, do something that's going to, especially with so much talent, so much effort, do something that's going to, like, pay off for you in the long run.
Well, I hate to tell you, this is the thing, and this and it particularly has to do with Star Trek fan films, according to me. A lot of the people who make these films are prop makers and costumers and things like that. And the story is sadly lacking in a lot of those, in my opinion. So you have a great story that you're telling, and that's going to draw people into it. But if you do a Star Trek, I've watched so many people make fan films that are boring as can be. And I'm kind of going like, Star Trek was about something. And you're just doing the simple sort of stuff. You know, there was one where these people are sitting shooting at the Klingons all the time, and they go away from them for about 10, 15 minutes. When they get back there, they're all in exactly the same position where they were 15 minutes ago. And they're still shooting stuff, and the whole audience went, "Ma!" You know, because something should have happened in the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, too. If you want to get into this, I always tell people, first of all, decide whether you're going to be a movie or TV director. If you can decide, you don't have to, but if you can, it'll just help you. And you can always change, but if you're doing a movie, it's more autonomy. TV is about collaborative and working with people and all that type of stuff. But if there's a show you like and you want to do TV, if you like CSI Miami, go shoot a scene, then shoot a fan film scene at CSI Miami. But before you show that to anybody, watch a CSI Miami. Do you have the zoom ins? Do you have the snap zooms? Do you have the cuts? Do you have the look? Is the camera moving? So if you're doing Star Trek fan film and stuff, if it's not going to happen in a Star Trek, you shouldn't be doing it.
That's right. Exactly right. Yeah. See, this is why I'm excited about your thing, because you know the characters, you know filmmaking, you know comics. All these elements are coming together to make this what I'm sure is going to be a great view.
It is, but the interesting thing is it's an action sequence. There's a beginning, middle, and end. He loses his powers. It's not giving away. Things happen, but there's not a lot of dialogue. It's like an opening scene to something, because the point is to make you want to go get the books. It's supposed to leave you with wanting more. You know what I mean? I don't have like scenes of him talking and explaining all the books to you and all that. Literally, you see the bad guy set it up, you see him, action ensues, you see what happens, and there's a resolution. And when you leave it, you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. I want to see more of that. And that, you know, and then so I told you, you know, like even a Star Trek fan film, whatever the fan film, you don't have to do all the things they do for as long as they do it to tell an interesting story. It's just about the story.
And it's always thus. This is what draws people to comics. Now, great art will pull people in who don't know much about the story, but a great story is what will keep you there. You can have the greatest art in the world, but if it's a dumb story, after a little while, you're kind of going to go, what else is there to read? You know, it's like TV shows. If it's a dumb plot, it's what I call an idiot plot. You have to be idiots to make these things happen. And if you know, the guy shoots and he misses, and, you know, they're always making fun of horror movies where they run, and then there's the guy with the blade standing behind them, sort of like, why are you doing it? Let's not go away. Let's stay right here where we're safe, kind of stuff. And you have to be an idiot to do that. And so I'm always, when I see movies like that, I just kind of go, oh, brother. I even did that during Star Wars one time. But the thing is I'm looking forward to your storytelling. Now, this, of course, leads me to another question. You've got three graphic novels done. I can't imagine that's all the Legend of the Mantamaji you have to tell. There's got to be more coming.
Yes, we are working on two new books right now. Brandon is I could count the pages right now. He's 84 pages in, maybe 90 pages in, and now he's doing one of the biggest sequences of the new book. We're introducing a couple new characters in the story. The Sanctuaries are like the brothers to the Mantamaji. Well, they had many powers back in 3,000 years ago, but because Sirak defeated all of them, they strictly only focused on being living weapons. Well, now you're going to meet the other group of Sanctuaries. And the stories, Legend of the Mantamaji, is told through his mother, used to tell Elijah, the main character, fairy tales. Mm-hmm. She said they were fairy tales, but they were really the true stories of the Manta Maja 3,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. You're going to learn that that was her version. Mm. Like, you don't necessarily know that her version was all the truth. So we're working on that now. It'll probably be another year before they come out. And as always with Brandon and I, we're so out of order. Like, what we do is we do it by scenes. Mm-hmm. So each scene has a name. And then he draws the scene, and then later on I put the book together, because that way I can move things around. Because if he numbered everything 1 to 200, it would get so confusing if I moved page 84 to page 162, and you'd have to figure out. So every scene, we move them by scenes, and then finally, once we're totally done, then we number it. So I have 2 weeks before the premiere, and then we go pretty much every week. We're at a different comic book convention. And so during that time, and I have a couple jobs, some shows I'm directing. So during that time, I have to get ahead, because I was way ahead writing, and now he's almost caught up to me. Uh-oh. So I have to get back on it and wrap it up.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it. Is it going to be again called Legends of the Manta Maja, like with a subtitle? How's it going to work?
Yes, Legend of the Manta Maja, Bloodline.
Bloodline, okay, that'll be good.
Yeah, we'll keep Legend of the Manta Maja, but from then on it'll be Bloodline, Final Circle, whatever. Legend of the Manta Maja, and then the name will be a subtitle underneath it.
Very cool. Very cool. I can't wait to see it. All this stuff is really fascinating to me, because I love those. I remember standing there at the booth and going, like, should I buy these things? I looked and I thought, no, this looks really good. I'm going to have to really have a go at it. So I bought all three of them. And I took them home, and I poured into them. The great thing was I had all three. And I could, when I got to the end of one, I could quickly put it down and get to two. I was so happy about that. And I would highly recommend, if anybody's going to buy these, buy all three so you can do like I did. You don't have to have this long pause while you're waiting for the next book to come into your mailbox or something. Get them all at the same time so you can read them all together, because they make a great, complete story that way. And not many books do that. So I was really impressed by that. And so I love the book. I just think it's terrific.
Oh, cool. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, Eric, I wish you much success going forward, and I can't wait to see all these other things. I just get wet in my whistle for all these good things. So I will definitely keep in touch with you, and of course, I get your – maybe we should tell people that. How do people get your Legends of the Manta Maja email newsletter?
Oh, all they have to do is go to the website, and they can sign up for it. We send them out all the time. If it's a Legend of the Manta Maja, which again, I'll spell MANTAMAJI.com, and it should come up right away if you want to get the newsletter. And it's fun. We tell you all the stuff we're doing, and you can go online and you go to our YouTube page and Action ENT and see all the behind the scenes episodes. And we're just gearing up for the August 4th blasting of this short, and I hope everybody watches it and gives it a chance. And it really is an essence of the books. Like, if you like it, then that's what the books are, and you'll like the books.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I can't wait. I can't wait for the things to show up. And it's going to be a long year for me to wait for the next volume to hit, because I like these things. These stories are great fun, so I like them a lot.
Thank you.
Keep it up, Eric. We'll be keeping up with you, and we'll keep reading your great stuff, and we'll look for your name on TV or movies, too, as we get the chance. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I really appreciate you having me on. I always have a great time talking to you, and hope we get to do it again.
You're doing a great product, and maybe another year from now we'll do this again so we can talk about the next volume that's coming out. So
sounds great.
It'll be great. So keep it up.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News. Interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Please be back next time when I'll be speaking with another great comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.